Hello and welcome. It's Wednesday, June 17th, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier in Tel Aviv. Iran stands to receive tens of billions of dollars in reconstruction funds and is already moving oil out of the Strait of Hormuz. We'll break down the latest reports on the US agreement with Iran. Plus, Misgav's Asha Fredman joins us with his report on how American taxpayers are funding pro-China, anti-Israel policies through the UN. Hear our conversation in a moment, but first the headlines. 2 days before the United States and Iran are due to sign an agreement, the US blockade on Iranian ports appears to have ended. The Tanker Trackers website reports that at least two Iranian oil tankers are headed out of the Strait of Hormuz. Bloomberg and Al Arabiya both published what they claim is the 14-point memorandum of understanding that's due to be signed in Geneva on Friday. It would allow Iran to start selling oil before a final deal is reached. And Reuters reports that half of a proposed $300 billion fund to rebuild Iran has already been secured from private donors. The International Energy Agency says the global oil market should gradually recover if the agreement holds and the Strait of Hormuz fully reopens. The three-month conflict disrupted more than 14 million barrels of oil a day, making it one of the biggest supply shocks in history. The agency now predicts an oil surplus next year as Gulf production recovers and Iranian exports resume. The IDF has carried out multiple airstrikes on Hezbollah targets in Lebanon this morning. The agreement with Iran explicitly includes Lebanon as one of the fronts covered by the ceasefire. Iran and Hezbollah accuse Israel of violating the agreement, but Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu insists Israeli troops will remain in Lebanon for as long as is necessary. The Hezbollah leader, Naim Qassem, is due to make a statement later today. At the same time, Beirut and Jerusalem are reportedly set to hold direct talks later this month. A new poll suggests Israel's political landscape is being reshaped by the emerging deal between the US and Iran. The Kan public broadcaster says former IDF chief Gadi Eisenkot's Yashar party has climbed to 21 seats, while Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud and Naftali Bennett's Together party have both lost support. The survey also found deep public unease over the agreement, with a majority of Israelis opposing the deal. 7 in 10 say Iran remains a threat. Violent clashes have erupted between police and ultra-Orthodox or Haredi protesters who blocked roads this morning to protest the arrest of draft dodgers. Police say five people were arrested after demonstrators refused to disperse, with some reportedly crawling beneath vehicles to stop the highway from being cleared. Footage from the scene showed officers using stun grenades and forcibly removing protesters before the road was reopened. And Israel is trying to restart one of the engines that helped make it the startup nation. The government's unveiled a new plan to help universities turn scientific discoveries into successful businesses after the number of startups and patents coming out of academia fell sharply in recent years. Officials hope the reforms will make it easier for researchers and entrepreneurs to work together and create the next Mobileye or breakthrough Israeli drug. Before we get to today's conversation, a quick reminder, you can sponsor Israel in 10. Just drop us a line at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. We'll be happy to hear from you. Now here's Executive Director of the Misgav Institute, Asha Fredman. President Trump's comments on Syria and Lebanon have sparked some real alarm here in Israel. Is Israel still going to be able to defend its borders?
I think Israel has been very, very clear that there can be no link between Iran and Lebanon. We can't allow Iran to be the one who calls the shots in Lebanon. And whenever Hezbollah threatens Israel's home front, its soldiers, Israel's going to respond. It has to. Like any country, it has to defend its border, has to defend its people. So I think that Israel is going to continue defending itself from Hezbollah, regardless of what is agreed upon in a deal with Iran.
Now, of course, this is all just reports, but the Trump administration hasn't denied that the reports are true, if you like. We are also hearing that already half of $300 billion has been pledged to Iran. Is this the ultimate lifeline for the IRGC?
Well, to be frank, it seems hard to believe that countries of the Gulf or countries in Asia or other countries are going to be willing to invest in Iran until they truly see that Iran has changed its ways. Right? I mean, sort of like investments in Gaza. Countries poured, Qatar, others poured billions of dollars. Hamas would attack Israel again and again. And each time, these investments would literally turn to dust. Now, we haven't yet seen any concrete indication that Iran is changing its ways. It's certainly conceivable that in the next few years, maybe in the next few months, we'll see another high-intensity conflict between Israel and Iran, which could include striking some of this infrastructure. So I think any country would wait to see before making any kind of real commitment to investing in Iran.
All right. Well, more will be revealed in the coming days, won't it? Your research on the United Nations is due to come out today. Essentially, you argue that it has become a mega institution that's funded by American taxpayers that is pro-China and anti-Israel.
Exactly. The UN has become this vast, sprawling, grotesque bureaucracy, which takes billions of dollars of U.S. taxpayer money and uses it to fund committees and resolutions and legal bodies that work against American interests, American security, American sovereignty, that promote Chinese interests, Chinese strategic projects around the world, China's exclusion of Taiwan. And of course, creates this permanent, absurd machinery, billions of dollars a year, that is dedicated to attacking and condemning Israel and promoting a Palestinian narrative.
And how did we get to this point?
We get to this point because the basic structural flaw of the UN is that there are many, many decisions, budgets, committees, new bodies that are all based on one country, one vote. Right? People think that it's just sort of meaningless General Assembly resolutions. That's not true. There are actually a lot of very, very important decisions and budgetary allocations at the UN that happen based on this one country, one vote. Now, China controls a group called G77 and China. G77 isn't really 77 countries. It's 134 countries. That means that China controls about 70% of the votes in the UN and can use the UN to shield itself from criticism while promoting its interests and undermining the interests of America, and certainly helping to promote, together with all kinds of rogue regimes and extremist actors, this international campaign against Israel.
Now, of course, the United States is the biggest donor to the United Nations. It also hosts the institution. President Trump has made a lot of noise about it in recent years, how he is unhappy with it. But is he taking any concrete steps in order to reduce America's burden?
It's important to understand the U.S. from 2015 to 2024 provided each year about 28% of the UN's budget. That's the American taxpayers paying for the UN. That was more than 183 of the next countries combined. So 2024, the last year of Biden, the United States provided the UN with $14.3 billion. They had the exact same vote as countries that were providing $40,000. And they had the populations of a small little town in the United States, or Somalia, or Afghanistan. Now, President Trump understands the deep problems of the UN, how the UN undermines American interests, and he's gone far farther than any previous president, withdrawing, for example, the U.S. from 31 U.N. organizations. And now I think it's time to take the next step. So to move from, you know, we're a part of the U.N., we agree to be assessed every year, and we're going to withdraw from problematic organizations, to no, we're only going to be part of international organizations that serve our interests. Our basic assumption is going to be disengagement, zero funding for the UN. That doesn't mean we have to disengage entirely. Here and there, case by case, where it serves American interests, we can take part, we can cooperate. But the basic assumption has to be the UN is problematic and we can create much better alternatives that will much more effectively advance the interests of America and of the West.
Some people would say the UN is not perfect, but it is the only real global body that exists where countries can talk to each other. I mean, would there be a risk if it was to collapse altogether?
America disengaging from the UN is not going to harm American global leadership. It's going to allow American global leadership to focus on functions and outcomes rather than on institutions. And we're talking about an institution that, since October 7th, 2023, has passed, they may pass more over the next couple of days, but it has already passed 74 resolutions against Israel and 5 legal activities against Israel. It has an international day against sanctions that America puts on other countries as part of its foreign policy. This is an organization that can't be reformed. It's an organization that's rotten to its core. And the important point is that it's the vast anti-Israel apparatus, machinery, is not just a threat to Israel. It's a threat to all democracies that need to fight terror, that actually care about international law, that think that rogue regimes should have their record examined. So it's a threat to Israel, but it's a threat to all Western democracies and all countries that actually want to see peace and not conflict and support for terror.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Thanks for watching. And please do subscribe using the link below. Just takes a few seconds. Goodbye.